afternoon. Welcome to the National Press Club. My name is Gil Klein. I'm vice president of the club and a national correspondent for Media General newspapers, writing for the Richmond Times-Dispatch, the Tampa Tribune, and the Winston-Salem Journal. I'd like to welcome club members in the audience today, as well as those of you who are watching this on C-SPAN or listening to this program on National Public Radio or the Global Internet Computer Network, something we've just added. Before introducing our head table, I would like to remind our members of some upcoming speakers. On Friday, June 18th, Dr. Robert Ballard, undersea explorer with the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute and discoverer of the Titanic, will describe his recent trip to Guadalcanal and discuss his search for the Lusitania. On Thursday, June 24th, Robert Strauss, the former ambassador to Russia, will present a speech entitled Russia and Current Affairs. And on Wednesday, June 30th, Carol Browner, administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency. Other upcoming luncheon speakers include U.S. Attorney General Janet Reno, South African President F.W. de Klerk, Postmaster General Marvin Runyon, Secretary of Health and Human Services Donna Shalala, and Secretary of Transportation Federico Pena. Audio and video tapes of these lunches are available through the National Press Club Library or by calling 1-800-952-TAPE. Pamela Meraldo, the new president of Planned Parenthood, which has been the lightning rod in the fight for abortion rights. She now heads an organization that serves 3.5 million women and men a year in a network of 900 clinics. Dr. Meraldo was reared a Catholic, but as a teenager, she recalls her Italian-born father gave her some somber advice. If I were a woman, he said, no one would tell me what to do with my body. That may be one reason Dr. Meraldo describes her church as an organization run by men that has not kept up with the times, to which a spokeswoman for the National Conference of Bishops responded, if pharmaceutical companies were as deceptive in labeling their products as Pamela Meraldo is in calling herself a Catholic, the FDA would have them in court, if not in irons. Yeah. But enough of theology. Dr. Meraldo comes to her post at a time when the mission of Planned Parenthood is changing, with the threat to abortion rights diminished by the election of President Clinton and his nomination yesterday of Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg to the Supreme Court. Dr. Meraldo has said her intention is to subtly shift the organization's focus toward health care to alleviate, she has said, the conditions that lead to abortion in the first place. She comes to the job with a firm health care background. Her 3 degrees, including her doctorate, are in nursing, and for 10 years she was head of the National League for Nursing. But the debate over health care will include a struggle over abortion. Planned Parenthood has made it clear that abortion must be included in basic health care benefits of any plan the government adopts. Right to lifers will undoubtedly try to get it removed. The lines appear to be drawn for a battle royale. So ladies and gentlemen, please join me in a warm press club welcome for Planned Parenthood's president, Dr. Pamela Meraldo.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you so much. It is a wonderful pleasure and an honor to be with you today. And this juncture in American society reminds me of a story of a woman that goes to see a lawyer about a divorce. He says, sit down, let's discuss it. And first thing he asks her is, do you have grounds? And she said, yes, we have about 3 acres. He said, no, let me try again. Do you have a grudge? She said, no, but we have a carport. He starts to get somewhat frustrated, and he said, lady, does your husband beat you up? She said, no, we both get up at about the same time. Really annoyed. He said, look, lady, do you want to divorce your husband or don't you? She said, no, I don't want the divorce at all. He wants a divorce because he says we have a failure to communicate. That reminds me of this juncture in society because similarly, the pro-choice community cannot fail to communicate the imperatives of a new message to the American people. And it's a message about social justice and the need to achieve social stability as we reform healthcare in America and in every aspect of our lives, racial equality, sex education, religion, and of course, the most serious sticking point for the pro-choice community, access to all reproductive health care. We must communicate as strongly and publicly as we can that we will not rest until all Americans enjoy the rights and liberties that we've been promised in this great nation, until all Americans have choice, choice of politics, choice of religion, choice of lifestyle, choice of health care, and of course, reproductive choice. Now, it's been said that in the land of the blind, the Cyclops is king, and without vision, the people perish. And for some time now, there has been a certain blindness in our national vision, a blindness that has undermined and negated our most cherished individual rights and liberties, a blindness that has created distrust in our social institutions, decay in our cities, despair in the currency of many of our lives. And nowhere is this blindness more apparent than in our healthcare delivery system. Currently, the basic right to public health protection eludes us. The state of our cities, from a public health point of view, one could argue, threatens the foundations of a civilized society. As a prominent public health physician recently put it, just like patients, cities can decay from within until nothing remains but a hulk maintained artificially by an emergency infusion. But we have an opportunity to salvage this situation because we're on the crest of major change in healthcare in America. And it's essential that this opportunity not be lost, but it will be lost if we as a nation fail to make a crucial distinction as we go about reforming healthcare. We cannot define healthcare as narrowly as we have in the past. This distinction is that healthcare must be defined as more than just the absence of disease. Health is a social and economic as well as a physical state of being where racism and religion, politics and prejudice, sex and sexuality are just as much a part of health as the neatly definable diseases that we teach in medical school. And if we look at health in the reality of this context, the murder of Dr. David Gunn outside a Florida abortion clinic and the beating of Rodney King are just as much real health issues as heart disease and cancer. Now, in the past, we failed to recognize the interconnectedness of these issues, and we created a healthcare delivery system that all too often ignores the health of women, ignores the health of people of color, ignores the health of the poor. We've created a system that performs $100 to $200 billion a year in unnecessary surgeries, mostly on women with hysterectomies and cesarean sections at the top of the list. We've created a system where there's been no real progress in curing breast cancer since 1956. A system where breast implants are promoted even though we know that they may well be carcinogenic. Where the majority of tranquilizers prescribed in the United States are prescribed on women. And perhaps most widely known recently are the clinical trials related to heart disease, which have been conducted solely on men, despite the fact that heart disease is the number one killer of women. Added to this list, of course, is America's shameful infant mortality rate, especially among African Americans, and the fact that the majority of the 37 million Americans without access to health care at all are women and children. This situation is simply inappropriate and unacceptable for America. And Planned Parenthood, with 1,000 health centers serving 5 million women and men annually, is working to end these injustices and realize a socially just healthcare delivery system. We seek to create a system that is not a sick care system, but one that protects the health of women and their families and protects a woman's right to choose as an investment in the future of American society. This is the cornerstone of Planned Parenthood's agenda, which we call Healthy Women, Healthy Families. At the heart of our vision lies this fundamental concept. If we're serious about health reform to improve the health of the nation, we must begin at the beginning with prevention. And because there is abundant evidence that what happens to us early in life has a profound impact on us later in life, prevention must begin with reproductive health care. We want to build public understanding that prevention is what reproductive health care is all about, what Planned Parenthood has been about for the past 77 years, stemming the tide of unplanned pregnancy and sexually transmitted disease through sex education and contraceptive services, reducing infant mortality and low birth weight through prenatal care, promoting early detection and treatment of reproductive cancers through pap tests and breast examinations, and averting the devastation of unwanted childbearing through family planning and through safe legal abortion. American taxpayers, as it is, spend $25 billion a year on families that are started by teen mothers. We want to build public understanding that reproductive health services are essential to America's economic and social health. Not only do they save millions in public and private expenditures, they also strengthen families, reduce welfare dependency, help teenagers stay in school, and help women take charge of their lives. And finally, we want to build public understanding that the tragedy of unwanted pregnancies lies at the heart of our most serious health and social problems. And all around us, we see the evidence, the legacy of unwantedness. Our cities are beehives of crime and drugs and poverty, homelessness and hopelessness, the predictable result of babies having babies who grow up on the painful slope of parental neglect and child abuse, situations that show in many ways we've lost our bearings in this country in terms of policies that work. Planned Parenthood's proposal is designed to help us get back on track by assuring that all reproductive health care, including abortion services, is woven into the mainstream of healthcare delivery in America. Now, I don't have to tell you that the struggle to include all women's health needs in a benefits package is probably going to be one of the most contentious battles that pro-choice America will ever have to fight. There is already talk, even before the Clinton proposal is officially announced, of dropping abortion services from the White House benefits package to appease the minority that oppose abortion. But I'm here to state unequivocally today that this will be intolerable. Along with the entire pro-choice community, Planned Parenthood will lead the charge to assure that all reproductive health services will be in the basic benefits package, not just for women who can afford it, but especially for women who can't. And we cannot and will not support a plan that falls short of this goal. So for many Americans, for many pro-choice Americans, health reform will be a watershed event just as significant as the Supreme Court's decision on Roe versus Wade. We have not struggled over the past two decades to secure reproductive rights for women and men in America to watch them be taken away. We must secure access to those rights in mainstream healthcare delivery and for once and for all put the abortion debate to rest and behind us, and now is the time. So the inclusion of reproductive health services and a basic benefits package will truly constitute a defining moment for reproductive rights in America, where abortion services are not a thing apart or an afterthought or a luxury for women who can afford them, but will be an integral component of an entire range of comprehensive health services, along with family planning, cancer screening, and prenatal care. And if the decade of the 80s was about securing our rights, the decade of the 90s is about securing access to those rights. And we got off to a very good start with two branches of government in our favor, two pro-choice branches of government. But all too soon came the reminder of the tragic murder of Dr. David Gunn, a Florida physician who performed abortions, the tragedy that brought the nation to its senses because it served as a reminder of the dangerous fanaticism that we're dealing with, and it served as a reminder that the battle is far from over. Because the murder of David Gunn was not an isolated incident. It was a signal of more to come and of the deep disturbance that lies bubbling beneath the surface in American society. And the abortion issue acts as a lightning rod for much of society's aggression and turmoil, and a smokescreen for a much more insidious agenda. The truth is that the pro-choice movement is not just about abortion. We are a movement for social reform in America. We represent the primacy of individual freedoms, the right to privacy in our personal lives. The pro-choice movement is about tolerance and mutual respect, as well as control of one's reproductive destiny. And during the last 12 years, in a most dangerous and insidious way, these values were threatened. They were placed in jeopardy by a political and social environment of bigotry and oppression, an ethos that sanctions hatred and even violence, all in the name of God. And so a climate was created in which what happened to Dr. Gunn was predictable and perhaps even inevitable. Because throughout the nation, the leadership of the political religious right is preaching a message of violence to people whom they know are psychologically vulnerable and unstable. In their churches, their literature, and their rallies, they preach that abortion providers are murderers acting against the will of God. And this fanaticism takes aim not just against women, but against people of color, against Latinos, Asians, gays, Jews, and any other group that doesn't follow the Ozzie and Harriet or Leave It to Beaver or Father Knows Best model. And the question remains, how can we put this fanaticism to an end? What can we do to ensure that this hatred and violence is stopped? To answer that question, it's vital that we understand that the forces driving the change in healthcare are the same forces driving the pro-choice movement. Both represent fighting the old established order. Both are popular calls for reform that symbolize the great power shift that's taking place in American society. The power that's shifting into new hands, the hands of the new majority in America, the hands of women, people of color, and the many others that Maya Angelou so eloquently chanted in her inaugural poem about liberty and the pursuit of happiness. She said, "The Asian, the Hispanic, the Jew, the African, the Native American, the Sioux, the Catholic, the Muslim, the French, the Greek, the Irish, the rabbi, the priest, the sheik, the gay, the straight, the preacher, the privileged, the homeless, the teacher." For Angelou's Americans, for pro-choice Americans, health reform is an opportunity to stand up to the rampant social injustices in our healthcare system, and as importantly, to stand up to the injustice of those who seek to impose their views by force on the majority. It's no longer enough just to talk about the importance of sex education and birth control and condom distribution in the schools. As a movement for social justice, the pro-choice community must go deeper to the roots of the problem and ask, what kind of a society produces teens who think having babies is all they can do? What kind of a society allows the infant mortality rate among African Americans to rival the infant mortality rate in third world countries? What kind of a society sits by and watches AIDS kill our friends and family and still tolerates a deplorable lack of sex education? What kind of a society allows an extremist agenda to turn clinics that provide badly needed health care into quasi-war zones and characterize murder as a form of political expression? And the media has a part to play here. Why is a convicted felon like Michael Bray, who actually served time in prison, not for dissent, but for firebombing women's clinics, elevated to the stature of political leader by some members of the press? Far too often, when leaders of the pro-choice movement comment on abortion rights, some in the press go to a Michael Bray or to a John Burt for a response. For those of you who don't know who John Burt is, he's a former member of the Ku Klux Klan and served time in jail for breaking into a Florida clinic and women's clinic and destroying medical equipment. We all have a responsibility to do better and to resolve to protect and defend the basic rights of every American and to give high stature and visibility in the media to behaviors that warrant it because they're good for society and good for the nation. In this era of health reform, Planned Parenthood's 1,000 health centers throughout the nation are doing more for young children, poor women, troubled teens, the sexually abused, than all the legions of the religious right can begin to fathom, much less undertake. To be sure, we are the real pro-life force in America. Planned Parenthood's affiliates in every state in the country caring for almost 5 million Americans who often have no other source of care. These people are not just glib posturers like anti-abortion extremists with about as much caring and compassion as Saddam Hussein. Caring and compassion is what you do, not what you say. And Planned Parenthood's affiliates can tell the nation more about the ravages of poverty, neglect, and hopelessness in the health of women and children than $1 billion worth of NIH grants. Actions do speak louder than words, and the actions of the anti-choice extremists reveal their true motives. And never let us forget their true motives in fanning the flames of the abortion fire, for never were they more apparent than at last summer's Republican convention, when their politics of bigotry and prejudice reached an all-time zenith. And who of us was not enraged by Pat Robertson's call for America to return to its true Christian roots, or Marilyn Quayle's denigration of women who abandon their true natures, or Pat Buchanan's invectives that we take back our cities, take back our country, take back our culture? You must ask, take back from whom? Take back from the majority of us? Take back from the millions of Americans who believe that government has no business in people's reproductive lives? From the majority of us who believe in social equality for men and women of all colors and religions? From the majority of us who want equal access to affordable, comprehensive health care for all Americans? From the majority of us who support Planned Parenthood and all that it stands for? Take back from us? We are America. And the pro-choice movement in America has not only improved the lives of millions of men and women and young people, we have renewed America's appreciation for the overriding goals of a democracy, goals that dissolve the deep differences between us. And health reform presents us with the opportunity to weave a new social fabric to create a world where all Americans are guaranteed their most basic rights, to create a socially just society. And we've only just begun. We're poised for a magnificent and bold new future, one that can mobilize the powerless, energize the powerful, and make a real and lasting difference in American society. So on behalf of the Planned Parenthood family, I look forward to that challenge and to shaping that future with all of you. Thank you very much for having me here today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.